Okay, let's unpack this. Imagine trying to build like a really high-end Swiss watch.
Right, lots of incredibly intricate moving parts.
Exactly. But imagine the gears, the springs, and the casing for that watch come from 40 different countries.
Which is a logistical nightmare on a good day.
Yeah, and if even one tiny specialized screw is delayed at customs, or, a single technician goes on strike, the entire assembly line just completely shuts down. You can't ship the watch.
It's totally frozen.
Right. Now, multiply the cost of that watch by about $100 million. And, well, that is the reality of the global aviation supply chain today.
It is the ultimate industrial bottleneck.
Yeah.
I mean, if you are trying to manage fleet capacity or project quarterly growth right now, the traditional rule books are completely useless.
Totally. Welcome to the deep dive. If you are a busy executive, whether you're running an airline network, managing a complex global supply chain, or, allocating aerospace investment capital, this briefing is designed for you.
Yeah, because we really need to look at how this impacts the bottom line.
Exactly. Our mission today is to explore the current, highly constrained state of the global narrow-body aircraft fleet. We are pulling from a massive stack of recent aviation reports.
Some really fascinating data in there, too.
Oh, absolutely. We've got the 2025 final delivery tally, Ishka's remarketing watch, deep dives into airline fleet strategies, like what American Airlines and Delta are doing.
And we're also digging into analyses of China's COMAC and their challenge to the Airbus-Boeing duopoly.
Right. Because for an executive, the narrow body market is really the beating heart of global aviation. But right now, it is experiencing this massive supply and demand crunch.
Rather than just looking at top-line numbers, we really need to understand the cascading effects here. The sheer lack of available airframes is forcing airlines to make, well, radical operational decisions.
So to understand the fleet landscape today, we have to look at the massive traffic jam at the manufacturer's delivery doors.
It's staggering. I mean, by the end of 2025, the global aircraft backlog exceeded 16,000 planes.
Like 16,000?
Yeah, 16,000. Meaning wait times for new narrow bodies stretch well into the 2030s.
I mean, that completely breaks traditional fleet planning. It's like trying to buy a popular car, but being told the dealership is backed up for a decade.
Exactly, which, makes their rental companies the most powerful players in town.
Right. Let's talk about the 2025 numbers. Airbus delivered 784 jets, which was dominated largely by the A321neo.
But they actually missed their target of 790.
Right, and the reason is so telling. It wasn't a core engineering failure. It was a quality issue with fuselage panels from just one supplier, Sofitec Aero.
One supplier anomaly throttles the output of the world's largest aerospace company.
And on the other side, Boeing delivered 595 jets in 2025. They finally breached the 42 per month cap for the 737MX in Q4.
But that was under incredibly strict FAA oversight.
Yeah, they're prioritizing quality, which is necessary, but airlines cannot get planes directly from the OEMs fast enough. Between the strikes, regulatory scrutiny, and supply chain disruptions, leasing companies are just making a killing.
Oh, absolutely. If we connect this to the bigger picture, the lack of available delivery slots has turned aircraft lessors into the ultimate gatekeepers of capacity.
Look at BOC Aviation. They just ordered 120 jets, 70 A320neos, and 50 737 MX-8s.
Right, for roughly $6.5 billion.
Yeah, and they reported a record net profit of $924 million last year.
It fundamentally changes how airlines plan their growth. Because you can't get new metal fast enough, airlines are forced to completely rethink how they use the metal they already have.
Which is playing out in real time. Airlines are stretching their current fleets to the absolute limit.
Yeah, it's a massive push into extreme operational efficiency.
Let's look at American Airlines. They currently boast the world's largest narrow-body fleet with 877 aircraft.
That's 391 Boeings and 486 Airbuses, right?
Exactly. And to handle demand, they are flying their older jets incredibly hard. Their 303 Boeing 737-800s have an average age of 16.1 years.
Which is pretty old for that level of utilization.
Extremely. In just 1 month, December 2025, those specific older jets were scheduled for nearly 33,000 flights.
Wow. I mean, pushing a 16-year-old airframe like that completely changes your maintenance economics.
Right, and they're not just flying them more, they're aggressively reconfiguring them. Airlines like Delta are intensely retrofitting older cabins on their A319s, A320s, and those old MD-88s and 90s.
Yeah, they're adding power to every seat, installing larger overhead bins.
And utilizing, quote, slimline seats. I mean, are slimline seats just a polite industry term for playing Tetris with human beings?
Well, what's fascinating here is that while the passenger pitch is shrinking on paper, the actual usable space sometimes remains steady.
Wait, really? How does that work?
Because of the thinner cushions. The modern seat back uses advanced composites, so the padding is sacrificed, but your knee room stays roughly the same.
Okay, but it's not just the seats. Crucially, airlines are outright removing aft galleys to squeeze in extra rows of passengers.
Yeah, the realization there is that on a 2-hour short-haul flight, massive beverage carts just aren't as important as maximizing seat density.
Sure, but as an executive, you have to weigh the short-term financial gains of that densification against potential long-term brand damage, right?
True, but mathematically, maintaining these older, fully paid-off jets with higher density seating is highly profitable. It dramatically drops their cost per available seat mile, or CSM, even with the higher maintenance costs.
Right, because the capital cost on the airframe is zero at that point.
Exactly.
So they're packing more people into single-aisle planes, but they are also forcing these planes to fly further than ever before.
Oh yeah, it is completely blurring the lines between short haul and long haul.
Which brings us to the Airbus A321XLR. It is totally changing the game. American Airlines is using its newly delivered XLRs to replace its older transcontinental A321Ts.
And they're opening up secondary transatlantic markets with them, right?
Yeah, they're flying them from JFK to Edinburgh, and they only put 155 seats in them, including flagship suites.
A route that used to demand a wide-body jet.
Exactly, but even more extreme is what IndiGo is doing. They are using the A321XLR to launch an 8-hour, 3,482 nautical mile nonstop flight.
In a narrow body.
Yes, from Bengaluru to Perth, Australia.
That is incredible.
But to make this distance, IndiGo had to reduce the seat count to 195.
Right down from their usual, what, 222 or 232 on a standard A321neo?
Yeah, strictly to save weight. And even then, they may still face payload restrictions depending on wind conditions. So here's where it gets really interesting.
Okay.
8 hours in an economy narrow body seat. Is this a brilliant strategy to open thin point-to-point routes, or is it just an exhausting endurance test for passengers?
Well, it really shows a shift from the traditional wide-body hub-and-spoke model to a narrow-body point-to-point model.
Bypassing the mega hubs entirely.
Exactly. Travelers consistently show they will trade wide-body comfort for the convenience of a direct flight and a cheaper ticket.
I mean, saving 3 hours on a layover is a huge psychological win.
It is, and it drastically lowers the trip cost for the airline.
So airlines are desperate for narrow bodies, and with Airbus and Boeing completely sold out for a decade, they are looking for a third option.
Which brings us to China's COMAC. But this alternative is deeply tangled in global politics and supply chains.
Right. And just to be completely clear with you, the listener, when we discuss things like Trump-Xi summits, tariffs, and rare earth minerals, we are not endorsing any political viewpoints or taking sides here.
Absolutely not. We're simply unpacking the geopolitical realities contained in these aerospace reports.
Because you can't ignore the data. And the facts show COMAC has made real strides. The smaller C909 has over 200 units in service.
And the C919, which is designed to rival the A320 and 737, has nearly 1,000 firm orders.
Mostly from domestic Chinese airlines, though. But still, even Ryanair CEO Michael O'Leary stated he would consider ordering COMAC jets if U.S. tariffs make Boeing aircraft too expensive.
It's a very strategic thing to say out loud.
Oh, absolutely. But COMAC is facing brutal supply chain realities of its own. They just had to slash their 2025 delivery target from 75 down to just 25 aircraft.
Wow, that's a massive cut.
Yeah, because the C919 heavily relies on Western parts, specifically the CFM LEP-1C engine. So if your competitor controls the engines that make your plane fly, are you really a competitor?
This raises an important question about the whole concept of managed trade.
Right. Because in May 2025, the U.S. temporarily blocked LEAP engine sales to China.
And that was widely seen as retaliation for Beijing's export ban on rare earths, right?
Yes.
Things like yttrium and scandium.
Exactly, which are absolutely crucial for Western aerospace engine coatings. Now, the engine block was lifted in July, but it showed the leverage at play.
Yeah, aircraft orders and rare earth mineral exports have become the ultimate geopolitical bargaining chips.
Meanwhile, Boeing's highly anticipated 500 jet order from China hinges completely on diplomatic summits between Washington and Beijing.
So executives can't just look at an aircraft specs anymore. They really have to look at international trade relations.
So what does this all mean?
There's a lot to process.
It is. We are looking at a 16,000 jet backlog that is empowering lessors, forcing airlines to pack older planes with slimline seats and driving the rise of 8-hour narrow-body flights.
All while opening a rather precarious door for COMAC to challenge the duopoly.
Right. So for you as an executive, fleet strategy today isn't just an operational choice. It's a highly complex matrix of supply chain survival, passenger psychology, and geopolitics.
And it leaves you with a really provocative thought to ponder.
Oh.
Yeah. If the backlog at Airbus and Boeing genuinely stretches out 14 years, and airlines are this desperate for narrow-body capacity today, will we start seeing airlines acquire their rivals not to gain new routes, but simply to cannibalize their existing fleets for metal and spare parts?
Wow. Corporate M&A just for the scrap metal and used engines?
It sounds extreme, but in this constrained of a market, it might be the only way to get capacity.
That is a brutal but fascinating reality. Well, thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive.
It's been great unpacking this with you.
Definitely. The next time you're stuck in a slimline seat on an 8-hour flight, you'll know exactly why you're there. We'll catch you next time.